From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. The U.S. Supreme Court rules in a 6-3 decision that it is illegal to fire an employee on the basis of sexual orientation or transgender status. This is a groundbreaking decision. You're hearing news of it all throughout the morning. It's particularly groundbreaking on the transgender issue. We're going to talk more about it in a moment, but the High Court also decided not to hear a challenge to California's sanctuary law. And we're going to start there with Professor Leslie Jacobs from University of the Pacific's McGeorge School of Law. She is also the director of the school's Capital Center for Law and Policy. Professor Jacobs, it's a jump start to the Monday. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
So this was a Trump administration challenge to a California law. Why did the justices make the decision to not hear the case?
Well, of course, we never know specifically, and we're going to have 4 votes you need in order for the justices to hear it. So we just didn't have the 4 votes to do that. Why did they do it? Well, first of all, they do have a bunch of immigration cases that they've already decided or they will be deciding. We're still waiting for the DACA case. They've issued a bunch of decisions about and orders having to do with immigration. So that's one thing. They have a lot of them. Do they really want another one? Do they need to take this one? This hinges on a particular issue having to do with whether federal law is supreme over the state sanctuary law. And I will say that the lower court reasoning, they were very thorough in staking out their opinions. So the court may not feel like it wants to take that and review it so much at this time either.
So I'm reading in the LA Times that only Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito voted to hear the administration's appeal. Perhaps the bigger question is whether this is any indicator about what the court might do on the DACA case, which is still pending and is going to be a powerful decision in the country.
No, it's not an indication about that at all.
Okay, so let's move to the gay rights in the workplace ruling. These were cases from Michigan. Would you start with your overall reaction to the decision?
Well, I didn't predict that this would happen. It was always a possibility, but here it is. So it is great for gay and transgender people. They don't have to go to Congress and get a new law. The law actually covers them, and we have 6 justices interpreting the law that way. So that's great. It's also very interesting as far as justice dynamics. That is, this wasn't a 5-4 decision, and it did come out in a way that might be unexpected. And so it's interesting that it drew the 2 justices, and in particular the 1 justice, Justice Gorsuch, who actually wrote the opinion. And so I can tell you more about that. That is, we're doing something different here than in the gay rights cases that are most familiar to people that Justice Kennedy was writing. Those were constitutional cases, and where the court was interpreting these broad constitutional words. Equal protection, liberty. It's a different job here that the court was doing. It was interpreting a statute that Congress wrote. Okay, and the question is, what do those words mean? And to have Justice Gorsuch writing it is particularly interesting because he, along with all the conservative justices to one extent or another, have been very vocal and have indeed followed through with this way of making decisions, and in particular, interpreting statutes where they say the words control, the words control. You know, we're not going to look at any of these legislative histories or the purpose that, you know, some of the legislators said. We look at the plain words of the statute, and we see what they mean.
So give some context about this going back to the 1964 law, and I guess the one key word in that law is the word sex.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you really want some history, the word sex went into the statute at the very, very end of deliberations. That is, this was all about race, and it was a huge battle over months in the House and particularly in the Senate to try to get the votes to get this passed. And it was actually a Republican senator who threw this in at the end, presumably because of sex, presumably to kill the bill, but it didn't. And so it became part of the law. And so there's not much legislative history to begin with about what because of sex means, but we do have decades of the court interpreting what those words mean and obviously expanding it, and we have the Equal Opportunity Employment Opportunity Commission that has also interpreted what it means, and there were 1991 amendments. So a lot has happened since then, but when it was first put in 1964, people, first of all, weren't thinking about sex. But second of all, the argument of the employers was that they, for sure, the people who put this and voted for it, weren't thinking about protecting gay and transgender people, and that that should control the interpretation today. And the court didn't go with that.
We haven't really said any details about these Michigan cases. One involved a woman who came out while she was working in the funeral industry. Her name is Amy Stevens. She is since deceased. The other, Gerald Brooks, worked in the foster care field and was on a gay softball team. What do you think the impact is going to be beyond the fact, Professor Jacobs, that this is a gay rights in the workplace specifically decision?
What's going to be the impact beyond the workplace?
Yes.
Is your question? Well, it could provoke more laws to get passed. I mean, as far as what this particular ruling says, it just applies to this particular statute. But it would be certainly something that, well, actually, I think what you're getting to, too, is if you have similar language in other statutes, then we could see courts interpreting it to say, you know what, even though the people who wrote this and put it in the statute weren't specifically thinking about gay people, the words are broad enough because of sex that they necessarily include gay and transgender people. So certainly if we have the same words in other statutes, it would guide that type of interpretation.
And I said in the introduction this was groundbreaking because of the transgender issue. Has the Supreme Court ruled on any cases that had to do with a transgender person or anything related to their life?
You know, you're I am not going to be able to come up with one right now, but there may be people in your audience who are going to call in and say, I missed it.
Well, I think this could be the first, which is why I'm putting it out there.
Yeah. And I'm being a careful lawyer and saying, I believe it to be the first.
But there is this scramble. The high court releases a decision, and everybody has to not only read it, interpret it, actually get it in their hands, and then figure out what it means. So that's what everybody's been in the process of doing for just about 2 hours right now. Back to the 6-3 vote, Professor Jacobs, the fact that it was not a 5-4 vote, that it was a 6-3 vote, what's important about that? Why does that make such a difference?
Well, it makes a difference because this court has been criticized for coming out with 5-4 decisions that are strictly along partisan lines. That is, the justices vote the way that the political party of the president who appointed them would like, and according to that policy. And the more the justices do that, the more people look up and say, well, gosh, you're just looking like politicians, and you're supposed to be something special, right? You're judges. You're interpreting what the law means. You're not supposed to be just doing what you want it to say. Okay, and so you know, the more it looks that way, the more of a difficulty all the justices have, but in particular the justices in the majority and the particularly new majority, which we are going to see a lot of 5-4 decisions. And so what's significant here is that the justices didn't vote, two of them didn't vote the way that you would think that their the political party of the president who appointed them would want them to vote. And as I said, it's particularly interesting with Justice Gorsuch because he has made such a big deal about looking to the plain words of the statute. And he really is lined up, you know, as one of the most conservative justices. He and Justice Thomas vote the same, more than any other justices. So he really is conservative on lots of things, but then, you know, through a good briefing, I think, and also lower court opinions, he was led to see that if he really is going to stick to his guns and be consistent with what he says is, ooh, the legitimate way to interpret a statute, then he had to say that, well, wow, because of sex just logically includes because of being gay or because of being transgender. And that's really what the language of the opinion says. It says, you know, it's, what we're doing here is we're doing straightforward application of legal terms with plain and settled meaning. Wow. So that's a big deal.
So besides Justice Neil Gorsuch, who else surprised everybody in their decision today?
Justice Roberts voted here, too. And so that's interesting that he also would go along with this reasoning. He hasn't staked his claim to being a legitimate judge on just looking at the plain meaning. So as far as being consistent within his own rulings, he could have more easily gone the other way. It's interesting he's over there, too. And it's interesting for people, too, who want to look at interpreting statutes as we go forward, because both of these justices signed on to this opinion where they explicitly rejected that they had to follow the application of the statute that the people who wrote it would have expected. That is, that was a claim that the dissenters make and the employers are making. They're saying, these guys who voted for the statute in 1964 never expected that it would protect gay people. And these, in our three decision, we've got six justices saying that just doesn't matter. That is, if you write these words and if they're broad, Congress, like the framers of the Constitution, can mean that the words will evolve according to evolving social practices and understandings. So that's huge.
All right, Professor Jacobs, it's always a pleasure, and I have a feeling we'll be talking to you again later this month as we get more in terms of rulings from the High Court. Thanks for your time today.
It was great to be here.
Leslie Jacobs is law professor at University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law. Larry Levine is a law professor there, too, and he's joining us. Professor Levine, welcome back to Insight, and what's your reaction to this Supreme Court ruling?
Well, if I were a betting person, I would have lost a lot of money today. So I am startled. I shouldn't necessarily be startled because, as my esteemed colleague Leslie Jacobs pointed out, that this opinion is not about constitutional interpretation. I think it's really important that we underscore that. For example, we're going to be dealing with cases in the future about due process and equal protection when it comes to gays and lesbians, ultimately transgender individuals. And that's the basis for the cases that Justice Kennedy has been so well known for. This case is very, very different. It's about statutory interpretation, and it is a textbook. This is going to be taught in all the law schools in terms of statutory interpretation.
Professor Levine, you mentioned Justice Anthony Kennedy. He had been the justice who wrote virtually all of the court's gay rights decisions, the significant ones previously, and he was succeeded by Justice Brett Kavanaugh. So give me some context for how his retirement sets some expectations for this case in particular.
Well, it's interesting that Justice Gorsuch, as Professor Jacobs was mentioning, is really writing about this sort of a plain meaning or just using the language of the statute. And I'm not even sure how Justice Kennedy would have ruled on this case. I'm not sure that maybe ironic that the justice most famous for support of gay rights in this case, I don't know exactly how Justice Kennedy would have come out. And so when we get to the constitutional cases, I'm not yet convinced that Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh are going to be as generous in their interpretation of the Constitution as Justice Kennedy was when it comes to gay rights. Time will tell. It is notable that in the language of the dissents, there's no Scalia's. There's no one who writes really harsh and vitriolic language. In both of the dissents, Justice Alito and Justice Kavanaugh were quite careful to express sort of sympathy to the plight of gays and lesbians and transgender folks who are fired from their jobs for no reason other than that status. But they interpret the statute differently than the majority.
Professor Levine, one last point, and that is that, as we're saying, Justice Brett Kavanaugh did write one of the dissents. Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote the majority opinion. We have a divide here on Trump appointees or Trump nominees who were confirmed to the court. Do we have a less predictable, kind of more interesting in a way, dynamic of justices than maybe was expected?
I think from time to time, that's always true. That I think we've looked at the Chief Justice and Chief Justice Roberts may be a moderating force on the court. In fact, there's a lot of expectation. And in terms of Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, I think time will tell exactly what mark they're going to make on the court. The expectation is it's going to be quite a conservative one. But today, from my point of view, was a very, very pleasant surprise.
Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate having you back on Insight with us.
Always a pleasure.
That's Larry Levine. He's law professor at McGeorge School of Law in Sacramento. And I'm sure that you will hear continuing news about the Supreme Court ruling on gay rights in the workplace throughout the day. Also, the decision not to hear the Trump administration's challenge to California's sanctuary law. That will all be at capradio.org. To bring you up to date on more news on this Monday, the family of Rashard Brooks has been speaking publicly in the past hour, and one of the comments has been to encourage peaceful protest for people who will protest yet another death. Rashard Brooks is a 27-year-old African-American man. He was shot twice in the back on Friday in the parking lot of a Wendy's in Atlanta and killed. The Wendy's was set on fire over the weekend. The officer who shot Brooks was fired. The city's police chief has resigned, and Brooks's death overnight was ruled a homicide. So policing continues to be taken up across the country. This is, of course, most recently since George Floyd's death on May 25th. There are a couple items on the agenda today. At 10:30, Sacramento's mayor, the city council members, and city leaders are going to hold a Zoom press conference, and they will announce what they're calling fundamental policing reforms. If you heard my conversation with the mayor last Monday, this is the follow-up to ideas that he was clearly starting to shape then. We're going to post a link to that conversation. But we have learned that the mayor will propose increased accountability and a restructuring of the Sacramento Police Department over the next 2 years. At 11 today, California's Attorney General will announce an agenda for statewide police reforms. That brings us up to noon, and then the governor will hold a press briefing that, besides being a COVID update, is expected to address some of this news from today. That live event will be on Cap Radio. The governor, of course, is going to be talking about budget negotiations, as this is state budget deadline day. And Cap Radio's Nicole Nixon is joining us by phone. She is politics reporter, and it's such a full plate, Nicole. Glad to have you with us today.
Hi, glad to be here.
So lawmakers are going to start to lose pay if they don't pass by midnight tonight a new budget. That means they have to deal with the projected $54.3 billion deficit. What do you know about negotiations?
Well, I don't know a ton. They are being pretty tight-lipped about those negotiations. There's not a deal yet, unless the governor plans to announce one today, but either way, they can't vote on it because of this three-day print rule. So it's important to point out, though, that they have to pass a budget, so this will probably not be the budget. They're just trying to meet this deadline so that they can keep getting paid, like you said. And if and when they do reach an agreement, we might see what's called a budget junior bill, you know, in the coming days. But the assembly is also scheduled to recess on Friday, so they don't really have a lot of time. And then, of course, the governor has to sign the budget into law by July 1st.
It seems to be general opinion that there will be some reconvening in late July or into August to reshape a more final version. And if that's the case, then go back to that 3-day print rule and how they're abiding by that.
Well, they released, you know, they didn't come to an agreement with the governor last week, even though they were negotiating a lot on it. So they, you know, in the absence of that agreement, they just printed out the legislature's agreement, you know, between that the assembly and the Senate. And that's what they're going to plan to vote on today. There is still some time before the end of the month. So if and when they do reach that agreement with the governor, that will probably be the final budget that they'll vote on later in the month.
I don't think we have a specific vote time at this point. We do have the governor's press conference at noon. But also, how are they doing this, Nicole? Is this all happening in person?
Yeah, remote voting is constitutionally shaky, their legislative attorneys think. So they haven't been voting remotely. They have done some, social distancing in their respective chambers. The bigger committee hearings have been actually held on the floor rather than committee rooms. And they've been able to do some, like, informational hearings remotely, but no voting, only in person.
In general, it seems that the governor has been under the radar. We've had no statewide press conference for more than a week. And as you alluded to, even the budget negotiations have been pretty quiet. Any sense overall of what that's all about?
Well, I think the fact that there hasn't been a Governor Newsom presser for more than a week is a sign of how the negotiations necessarily want to be negotiating with lawmakers on one hand and then facing questions from a bunch of reporters about how those negotiations are going and if you've changed your mind about cutting X, Y, and Z. So we'll see if he has anything to say about that in the few hours. And we know that there are a lot of disagreements between the governor and the legislature, but, you know, there's a lot of them, and I'm not sure what the actual sticking points are right now.
We have had COVID-19 cases climbing, though in the meantime, certainly testing is up, but the cases spiked up high with the reopening. They've backed off a little bit in the last couple days. California is among a group of states across the country experiencing this. So a COVID-19 update is certainly going to be part of the agenda today. I would imagine he'll comment about the Supreme Court decisions and the decision not to hear the sanctuary law case. Anything else out there that's looming that we might not be seeing that you might know about?
Well, I do know that he was asked about reopenings in the face of the coronavirus cases climbing, and he's defended that. You know, he's said that the state has spent the last 3 months building up hospital capacity and testing capacity, and he said we're just not in the same place that we were at the start of this crisis. He could address that. And then, man, there's a lot of news going on today. I think maybe we can even expect this presser to go on a little longer than an hour.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. We'll all be back together again at noon today. Appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Nicole Nixon is Cap Radio's politics reporter. And again, that press conference by the governor will be at noon today. You'll hear it at capradio.org, on air, and across the state, in fact, at your public radio station. Up next, we're going to jump into some tips for staying safe as you return to the gym that you like to go to, or you decide to go to a movie and maybe even get on a plane again. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.